after all the touring and stuff, Jeffrey went back to London and I went back to Berlin and bat-seated some more. Around this time, like, my communication with Jeffrey got kind of less and less because there wasn't actually anything pressing. You know, we had worked really hard on the making the Mother Juno thing happen and whatever tours after that. So a lot of the time we just would take a break after and do whatever and decompress. At this point, his health started really taking a turn for the worse. His drinking and drugs took a turn for the worse again. And I think he was doing a lot of hiding it from Rami. So I'm actually really not sure what happened in all of this period. And then Jeffrey would call me to rehearse or whatever. And, you know, since Berlin's not far from London, I would just go and rehearse when I'd gotten sober again. So my life kind of went in a different way. Being around drinking and drug taking was really, you know, whatever. And so I was, like, not around a lot. And I think Jeffrey and Rami were very much in their own life. You know, they lived together and were together every day. And I think Rami was really a really good thing for Jeffrey, you know, because I think her and her friends really took care of him or tried to take care of him. I don't know how you can take care of an unruly person, but definitely tried. And although I was friends with him, I just wouldn't hang around just because I was not interested in that kind of lifestyle anymore of you know, going out to have a drink every night. Actually, I was starting to really lose interest in the gun club again. It was a weird period for me. I think I was going through some crazy confusion again, and I think I was really itching to do something on my own, and I think I was moving in my life in a different direction. I was definitely moving geographically in a different direction. Pastoral Hide and Seek, you know, I still really like that record. I don't think it's the best record, but I think it has its definite really great moments, and I think some of the songs are really great. Jeffrey kind of chose to produce it himself, and my input was not as much as it was. It was very much a Rami-Jeffrey collaboration more than a Kid and Jeffrey collaboration. And that probably had more to do with Jeffrey was really into guitar playing again, and they lived together and were lovers and also bandmates. So they were in their own world, and that's the whole thing about, like, the couple thing. But somehow I didn't feel left out. I was kind of like, well, maybe this is looked really good, because I was looking to pursue some different kind of things. So that record we did in Belgium, I remember I came and did what I did, and then I left. I didn't have a lot of input. I didn't stay around and say, you know, when they're mixing or anything. I was kind of just a player on the record. I think we were playing live a lot around this period. There's some live records from that tour. The shows were not all good. Jeffrey was get drunker and drunker and more incoherent on stage. And it was annoying, really. You know, we had been a really tight, really great band. I remember playing, and I remember Jeffrey had taken a lot of Valium, and we were like saying, like, you're playing out of time and really slow. And he would be insisting that he wasn't. And it was just starting to get really maddening, stuff like that. And I was still busy with the Bad Seeds, and that was, like, quite not only artistically satisfying, but lucrative. So it was almost like, I don't have time to be fucking around with this fucked upness. I love Jeffrey, and I think he's amazing. Amazing thing, and this band is really amazing, but there's something going really wrong, something kind of dark and wrong. Usually that was not something that would be very daunting, but at this time it wasn't a good fucking up. It was like, it wasn't motivating the creativity. It was kind of bringing it down, and I think there was a lot of frustration with where the band was going, and the success of the band was not getting more. It was getting less. And Mother Juno was somewhat of a comeback, but after that, we didn't really sustain the kind of popularity that I could go to the next thing or whatever. And I think it was just because people were just sick of seeing this fucked up band on stage. And that was no longer that entertaining after a while. I stuck around because it's my band with Jeffrey, and what else am I going to do? We'd been through dark periods before and come out of them, so I was waiting around to see if we'd come out of it, or he would come out of it. And I think we kind of did for a moment, because then, actually, Nick Sanderson had left the band after the Pastoral Hide and Seek tour. And we went through a series of drummers. We had this guy Nigel, who was in the Cult, and then we had this other friend of Nick's. Then we ended up doing some recordings with Back to the Fur Bible with Desi, with Desperate from the Fur Bible. Then I got really excited again because we did this EP called Sorrow Knows. And that was a song. The music was really interesting again. It was, again, another thing where I thought, oh my God, this is cool. Jeffrey wants to be cool. We were listening to Captain Beefheart and David Bowie Low, and the influence got a bit off track again and mixed up, and it became interesting for that one EP. So the Divinity EP, after Nick Sanderson had left, and we got Desi to come in and play drums again, Desperate, after a series of drummers. It was good because I had been losing interest in the band until Jeffrey came up with this little crop of songs, which were like Sorrow Knows, Keys to the Kingdom, which was actually a really old Gun Club song, I think one that might be on that Early Warning or something. It's like a really old. Even I didn't play it. You know, it might have been from like around Fire of Love, Miami time. Richard Speck, that song's great. And we did have one last spurt of, okay, things changed. These songs are really good. The song Sorrow Knows is basically a riff that we just played, and that was just something that kind of happened. And, you know, Jeffrey just had the riff and wanted to make a really long dance song. It's not really a traditional dance song. The way it turned out was really, really great. And Jeffrey was very into guitar playing, so there's like a lot of soloing and a lot of stuff going on, and we had a lot of interplay and like pieces of things sliding, fitting together and going in and out of each other. So that EP gave me a little bit more hope in sticking around for a little longer. I moved to Los Angeles at this point and decided to pursue my own things. And I think that's when I met Sally Norvell, and that's when I started working on Conga Norvell and deciding that I really had to do my own trip. The Gun Club, for me, I kept seeing the popularity going away, and I was really seeing Jeffrey going away. My heart was not in it anymore. I believe that's what I told Jeffrey. I don't even remember. Most of my departures from bands are not big dramatic moments in life. It's just like going on to the next thing. I think that I told Jeffrey, look, I can't do it anymore. And he said, okay, when your relationship, the other person decides they're not in love with you anymore, there's not really anything you can do to get them to be in love with you anymore. So that was kind of the situation with that. It wasn't that I didn't love Jeffrey or believe in him, but the circumstances were too stacked against me staying in the band. And it didn't seem worth my while, and it didn't seem like something that would make me happy, and it didn't seem like it was going to go anywhere. And so that was it. I said, no more. I'm staying in L.A. He said, fine. He made another record, and I started Conga Norvell. Then Jeffrey and Rami's relationship ended, and Jeffrey ended up getting deported from England and ended up having to come back to Los Angeles. And Jeffrey obviously called me, since he was in Los Angeles at his mother's house. We didn't immediately say we were going to do something. I could see Jeffrey was really bad off. I was being a friend to him because his relationship had ended. But he was getting in a bad way with drinking, like in a really severely bad thing. And his mother lived up the street from that bar, the Viper Room. So he would just go there and hang out every night because he could get in for free and drink for free, and kind of befriended that Sunset Strip nightlife sort of world. I was a bit, excuse me, gun shy of being around. And I was on my own trip, I believe, around this time. I had started taking drugs again. You know, a series of horrible things happened in my life. Like, you know, my father died, friends of mine. There was another crazy wave of people dying from AIDS. And I was starting Congo Norvell. I would talk to him a lot more on the phone than I would see him. Some people got together and convinced Jeffrey that he should do a show at the Viper Room. And they would find a band, and they said to ask me, like an oldies show, sort of. You know, like a, you know, just play Fire of Love, Miami song, or whatever, just like rock it out. Jeffrey asked me to do that, and I was like, why not? That could be fun. So he got a band together with some guys, this guy Mike Mart, who had been in Texan the Horseheads, and these guys who had been playing with Wayne Kramer, all very cool guys. And I think Mike really got it together. And I think a lot of people at the Viper Room saw something that was seriously wrong with Jeffrey's drinking and behavior. And a lot of people had seen it, his parents, his family, you know, and I tried to help suggest putting him in rehab and this and that. And he would go and come out and like escape, like a lot of people do, and insist he was okay. We did a show, and it was really fun and really great, and really people were really excited, and people were like, you should go on tour, you could make a lot of money, and you know, you just play these songs, this is what people want and stuff. And then me and Jeffrey talked about it, and we said, that really sounds like a totally miserable idea to us. That's never what we were about, and always what we were running away from. Maybe in a way, it probably would have been smart, because it would have been very financially lucrative and probably would have made a lot of people happy. But it really just seemed like it would have been a hellish experience to be an oldies act. I'm not big on the comeback act. As you can see, I'm always still trying to do something different. And that's just not my scene at all. You know, musically, you know, I can visit my past and I can draw upon my past, but I'm not interested in reliving my past. You know, definitely not musically. We did a few shows, though. We actually played a benefit concert for this friend of mine, Travis John Elford. We were like, raising money for him to make a record. He was a friend of mine that was dying of AIDS and was trying to finish his record. So me and L7 and Carla and the Geraldine Fibbers got in the Gun Club. And I think even Congo Norvell played. I think I did double duty. And we made a concert and raised a lot of funds, and it was really good. And that show went really well. And then somehow someone convinced us to do another show a few months later. Jeffrey had gone really downhill, like physically. Like he was just completely bloated and really out of it. People said they really liked the concert, but I remember thinking this is really not so much that the band didn't play horribly, but it was just a bad vibe. I knew something was really, really bad. And that was kind of was the last thing I did with Jeffrey. I think finally his family insisted that he do something about himself. People were trying to get him into go to rehab, and he wouldn't do it. So he went to his father's house in Utah. And he was finishing writing that book, Go Tell the Mountain, because Henry Rollins had commissioned him to write a book. You know, that would be a lyric book and prose and a biography of the story of the Gun Club. And so he had been writing that. And at this point, I moved to New York with Congo Norvell. And I'd actually been talking to Jeffrey again because he was at his father's. He was sober again. And on the phone, he was the Jeffrey I always have known. And we were laughing about stuff and making a plan that he got his shit together again. He'd come to New York and I'd do something with him. And I was looking for musicians in New York to play and just different things. Because he was bored as shit in Utah. One day I called. Yeah, he called me and then I didn't call him back for a few days. And then I called and I got his mother on the phone. And she's like, oh, I guess you heard. Like, heard what? But I kind of knew exactly what she was going to say. She's like, yeah, Jeffrey went into a coma, like had a brain aneurysm, and then he died yesterday. And I was completely devastated and shocked. And it's weird because I kind of knew it could happen, and everyone could have seen that that was what was happening. But it's kind of, you don't know till it really happens. And so it was really a sad and horrible time. The last conversations I had, he was like very up and very happy. And he actually was reading me like stuff from his book. Like he was reading all that stuff he was writing about. Like Isaac Hayes was channeling. He was channeling Isaac Hayes through the Tokyo radio tower. And all this really insane stuff. And he was reading that to me. And we were like completely hysterically laughing on the phone. And that was my last conversations with him, which was, you know, actually in hindsight, quite a nice last conversation to have. But so that was the end of that.